Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello everyone, this is Henry Will, and welcome to another pmlessonslearned.com conference call. Today is November the 15th, 2007, and this will be podcast number 25 of our podcasts. For those of you that are interested, you can always go to our website and find our podcasts on our website at pmlessonslearned.com. There's an archive link there. So this evening for our call, we have a very interesting subject. The subject is going to be client relationship management, lessons learned from the dog whisperer. We'll be getting to that subject in just a few minutes. I just wanted to announce that we have a few panelists with us this evening. We have with us Steve Blaze. Steve, you're on the line, right? He's probably got his line muted.
Yes, I am, Henry.
Yes, Steve, I wanted to say congratulations. I heard from Mara Burns, who is also one of our panelists that is on our many of our calls. She mentioned that she got together with you for a big birthday bash just, what was it, last week, I think, or maybe earlier this week.
Actually, it's coming up this Saturday.
Oh, okay. Well, congratulations on that. Steve Blaze has many years of experience, as those of you that have been with us on our calls have heard him before giving some of his advice on some of the many topics that we've covered. So we're happy that he's on the call again this evening. We also have with us David Radkovich. Thank you for muting there. Star 6 to mute, folks. David Radkovich is the person that runs our conference calls on the first Thursday every month right now. They are our PMP exam study group conference calls. David, thanks for being on the call.
Thank you, Henry. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, could you just give us a little rundown of some of the topics that you've covered lately, or if you have any topics that you have planned coming up?
Actually, Henry, glad you brought it up. I don't have a topic for next month. I was going to make one up. I was going to look at the pen box and look at a chapter that we haven't covered. But we've covered a lot of the chapters in the pen box. We've covered scope management, time management, costs. The project management framework, and quite a few others, and all those presentations are on the website, the Yahoo group.
Yeah, and I know that I've had some people contacting us lately that have been very interested in how they can learn more and study more for the PMP exam, and somebody had emailed us just a couple of days ago, and I referred them over to David because of his experience with studying for the PMP exam. And actually passing it just this past March. So I referred people to him, and also I refer people to the archive on our site because they can use that information from the past podcast. So thank you very much, David, for being on the line as another one of our panelists this evening. I do want to mention that we're going to be having a break for the holidays in PM Lessons Learned. Actually, tonight's call is going to be the last one for the year for our Lessons Learned calls, and then we'll be starting up again in January. Next week will be our Job Shop call, which is usually held on the Thursday, the fourth Thursday every month. We've moved it because that's Thanksgiving. I don't think we'd have many people on the call. We've moved it to Monday. So that call will be on November the 19th, and then we're going to have our PMP study group call on December the 6th. And then we'll be taking off for the holidays until the end of the year, and then we'll start back up on January the 10th with another Job Shop call. So that schedule can be found on our website. Just click on the link on the left-hand side, pmlessonslearned.com. You'll see a link that says Schedule of Future Conference Calls. I also wanted to mention tonight that we do have a copy of the presentation that John is going to be sharing with us in just a moment. That presentation is available by going to our website, and you'll see on the left-hand side there's a link that says files, free membership required. You can click on that. It'll take you to the files section of our Yahoo group. And then in there, you'll see a folder that says materials and presentations for conference calls. And if you look in there, you'll see the one with tonight's topic. One other thing that I would like to mention to the group is that I talked to Allison Maltese. If you remember, Allison Maltese has been on our calls before, sharing some of the career segments that we've had on our call. And a lot of you may or may not have known, but Allison had a baby boy just a month ago today on October the 15th. She's doing well. The baby's doing well. Third child, so congratulations to her. And I talked to her just this evening, and she was asking us how the group is doing. And when I told her that we now have about 639 members, she said, wow, that's doubled since the last time I heard. So she was surprised at how quickly the group is growing. I'd also like to mention that members of PMLessonsLearn.com are going on a cruise. Yes, a cruise. We're going to go and have some fun together. And if you want to, you can optionally earn some PDUs. PDUs are professional development units that once you become PMP certified, you need to get 60 of them every 3 years to recertify. And you can get them on this cruise. There will be speakers on project management topics. The cruise is actually going from the New Jersey, New York area to Bermuda on May 17th, 2008 for 5 nights. The costs are very competitive with some of the best prices you can get out there. And we're putting a link on our website this evening about the information for it. So I advise you to take a look at that if you'd like to go with us and meet some of the other PMLessonsLearn.com people on this cruise. We'll be sending out an email to the list, and we'll be posting information on the website. So I want to get into our topic this evening. You've heard enough from me. Tonight, presenting to us is John Jones. He's an MBA and a PMP, and he's also an IBM Executive Certified Project Manager. John joined IBM in 2000 as a project manager after serving as an officer in the U.S. Navy. And John, you're probably going to want to be listening maybe to one of our past podcasts by Jim Blaylock. He's an author, and he regularly contributes to our email list with PM best practices. And if I remember correctly, he is also a retired Navy. So we're having another person presenting that's from the service again on tonight's call, and that's great. So John actually managed a variety of projects in the business consulting services branch of IBM for his first 4 years. He joined the Engineering and Technology Services Group in November of 2003. And after about 2.5 years of managing various hardware and design projects, he assumed management responsibilities for the IBM Global Engineering Solution Components project management team. He's an IBM Executive Certified Project Manager, as I mentioned before, and he was awarded the 2006 IBM Project Management Excellence Award. He received his BS degree from the U.S. Naval Academy and his MBA from the University of Maryland. Now, I have to say that I've heard John present this topic before, and I was just so enamored with how he tied in client relationship management with some of the things that you've heard. If any of you have ever listened to the show, The Dog Whisperer, if you ever watched it before, you'll see how he ties these things together in such a great way. I found this to be such a great presentation. I'm really looking forward to hearing it again, and I'm sure I'm going to get even more out of it. So, John, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate you being part of the group and joining us for this call this evening.
Yeah, thank you for introducing me, Henry.
So, sure. Good evening. We're glad you can come. What's that?
And hopefully you have the presentation open in front of you.
Yeah, I think everybody should at this point.
Okay, great. Thank you for coming and providing me with an opportunity to share something that I believe is foundational to the success of every good project manager, client relationship management. I currently manage a team of IBM project managers and IBM Global Engineering Solutions, a division within STG, or Systems and Technology Group, that until recently has been called ENTS. What has always amazed me is how you can have two seemingly identical project managers go into projects with seemingly similar situations and have one succeed while the other one fails. How do you explain that? This is even more important to me now as I try to match PMs to projects to increase their chances of success as a manager of PMs. So if we can go to slide two. During today's presentation, I will be leveraging a reference that I strongly encourage all of you to read in the copious amounts of free time that I'm sure that you have available as project leaders. The first reference is the Alpha Project Managers, what the top 2% know that the rest don't. I actually came across this book while reading a short article on it in the monthly PMI newsletter. This book discusses the results of a survey called the Alpha Study that was developed to understand the differences between the Alpha PMs and the non-Alpha PMs. The Alpha PMs were the PMs who were rated in the top 2% of the 860 PMs surveyed for the study. It's a very quick read that has high return on investment. The second reference is available to IBM project managers only. It is the 2006 Prevention Measures to Avoid Trouble Projects paper written by IBM's Worldwide Quality Assurance Organization. It's a thorough and well-written summary of the trouble projects that we experience in IBM, as well as recommended prevention measures. I will call this paper the Trouble Projects paper throughout this presentation. So for those of you who are IBMers, I strongly recommend that you look that up. Sometimes we carry misconceptions around about who is responsible for client relationship management. I am a project manager, and I would tell you that the PM should be the primary driver of the client relationship. However, the PM is not the only participant in the client relationship management role. Technical leaders and architects interact with the client significantly. On many projects, the senior technical person may actually have more client interaction than the PM. Given that, I will use the term project leader during this presentation. Project leaders include PMs, technical leaders, architects, and any other project team members who have a significant exposure to the client. By the end of today's session, you will be able to identify commonality among clients. They're really all the same. I've managed projects for a number of clients across various industries and technologies. Although they all insist that they're special or unique, they're mostly the same. Some may have harder characters to interact with. Others may have more challenging solutions that we're tackling for them. But the factors that motivate our clients are, by and large, the same. Understand methods for me. Yes.
If I might interrupt. Somebody out there has a speaker phone turned on and they haven't muted their phone, so we're getting an echo. If you're not speaking at this time, could you do me a favor and press *6 to mute your line? That'd be very helpful so that we don't get the echo. Sorry about that, John.
No, not a problem.
Continue.
Okay. So understanding methods for meeting the client's needs using techniques refined by the dog whisperer. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to get your clients to sit and stay by the end of this session, but we will discuss a number of methods that you can employ to become a more effective project leader. And then be the pack leader for your project. I can't guarantee you that your project delivery will be smoother by you just participating in this session, but if you actively and consistently use the techniques identified during this session, you can more easily become your client's pack leader. Moving on to three. After a short introduction, I'm going to talk about the dog whisperer and why this show is relevant to project leaders. We'll follow that up with three focus areas. Clients are not friends, rehabilitating is not about fixing, and practice unwavering leadership. We will then summarize our findings in the conclusion. First things first, clients are not dogs. Even though you may have had previous experiences that make you question the validity of this statement, this presentation is no way intended to get you to start treating your clients like dogs. Dogs and clients are different in a number of ways. First, dogs are animals. Clients are human. Second, dogs totally rely on their owners for food, water, and shelter. We totally rely on our clients to ensure that our light bills stay on at the end of the month. And third, probably the most significant difference between dogs and clients, dogs are more loyal than clients. However, there are a number of things that we can take away from dog trainers, lessons that we can leverage on our clients. Moving on to slide 4. So let's introduce you to this dog whisperer. And I'm sure that at least some of you on the phone have had an opportunity to watch this over, the last several years. We're going to talk about, the history of dogs, self-realization. We'll start with Caesarism, number one, and then also talk about some basic truths about dogs. Moving on to slide 5. People started domesticating wild dogs somewhere between 10,000 and 100,000 years ago. No one can say exactly when for sure. However, there's plenty of ancient art that depicts dogs with humans. This wall painting shown on the right comes from Beni Hasan, a necropolis containing tombs primarily from the 11th and 12th dynasties of ancient Egypt over 4,000 years ago. Dogs had already been with humans for at least 6 millennia when the artist rendered this dog. The dog is built in long legs of the typical hound. It resembles a greyhound or a general Egyptian hunting hound. The first dogs were direct descendants from wild wolves and could be traced back to 9 original domesticated dog breeds. So why did people domesticate dogs? First, dogs have a number of senses that are much more accurate than ours. Dogs are able to hear over a much wider frequency band than humans, 40 hertz to 60 kilohertz depending on the breed of the dog, versus 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz for humans. Second, dogs' sense of smell are also much more developed than humans. Dogs have 25 times more olfactory receptors than their human counterparts. This allows dogs to smell 50 to 100 times better than humans. Third, dogs are naturally social pack animals. They adapt very easily to being a member of a pack, especially when raised around humans early. Benefits 1 and 2 allowed humans to use dogs across a number of capacities. During the course of human-dog history, dogs have served a number of roles. Guide dogs served as eyes for the blind. Wartime dogs served as messengers, sentries, and scouts. Sniffing dogs sniff out explosives, drugs, and contraband in airports. Dogs have been used for herding and hunting. And even in desperate times, dogs have served food for the hungry, and delicacies in some countries even today. Over time, dogs stopped being workers and started to slow transition to companions and ultimately man's best friend, or even perceived family members. It was during this time that we started doing some things that really didn't seem to make a lot of sense. The ultimate example of this is the creation of dog psychologists, whose sole job was to help dog owners understand what was going on in the heads of their beloved canines. When did we start to lose control? Did we cross the line and become too touchy-feely? Did our dogs really need Dr. Phil analyzing them to see what kind of forgotten incidents from their puppyhood played a role in their current depression or bad behavior? Why were there so many bad dogs? Was it the dogs? Or their selected breed? Or was it us? Moving to slide 6. We have met the enemy, and he is us. Although I know you were on mute, I'm asking the question anyways. Who knows where this quote came from? Well, it may be surprising that this quote actually came from Walt Kelly. Walt Kelly was the famous American cartoonist who created the cartoon Pogo and was the actor for Pinocchio, Dumbo, and Fantasia. Odd that we would receive such a profound statement from a cartoonist. However, anyone who has read a Dilbert comic could tell you that the cartoonists can often be the most profound or accurate communicators of the truth. Until we come to grips with the fact that it is most often our poor leadership that results in troubled projects, we cannot move forward in this discussion. So while everybody's on mute, and I'm sure that your families will think that you're crazy, but I'm going to ask that you do this anyways. I want you to repeat after me. I am the owner of my client relationship, and I ultimately determine the success of my project. Good. Now that we have that taken care of, I'd like to start drawing the linkages between dogs and clients. I'm sure there are at least a few of you out there right now who are wondering, why is he talking about dogs and client relationships? I grew up with dogs, my favorite being a 140-pound St. Bernard named Dodie. I don't currently have a dog because, like most of you, my work keeps me plenty busy. Over the past couple of years, my wife has been trying to convince me to get her a dog. She would like a King Charles Cavalier Spaniel, pictured on the right. I would like an English Mastiff. Clearly, I have done a poor job of managing the expectations of my primary client in my life, my wife, so please don't take this lesson away with you. It's been a while since I've had a dog, so I thought I would brush up on what a good owner should do. A couple of years ago, I started watching a show on the National Geographic Channel called The Dog Whisperer. I'm sure that at least some of you on this call have seen one or more episodes of this show. If not, please look it up, and I really believe that you will see dog training in a completely new context with, as it pertains to client relationship management, if you haven't seen it before. For those of you who may not be quite as familiar with the show, it's about a dog trainer by the name of Cesar Milan. Cesar is an acclaimed dog behavior expert who has cared for and rehabilitated dogs for most of his life. Cesar's philosophy espouses that there are no bad dogs. Unruly and aggressive behaviors result from a lack of proper training, people training. In his show, Cesar rehabilitates a number of dogs that most of us would consider way beyond saving. What is so striking about his show isn't that he does an outstanding job training dogs. It's his philosophy. His philosophy is what makes him different and effective. At this time, I'd like to share the first Cesarism with you. Moving to slide 7. I rehabilitate dogs, I train people. How is this significant? Let's take a moment to reflect on it. There are 3 points that you should carry away from the statement. First, the statement acknowledges that it's not the dog's fault that they're acting bad. By stating this, we, the dog owners, have to accept responsibility for the dog's behavior, which means we must change our behavior if we want our dogs to change theirs. How does this apply to the world of client relationship management? Let's start with switching a couple of words around. Moving to slide 8. I rehabilitate clients. I train project leaders. As a key project team member, you are responsible for the health of your client relationship and ultimately client satisfaction. Do you think that dogs are happy when they are acting fearful or angry? Absolutely not. Cesar would tell you that they are attempting to fill a leadership void in their pack. Yes, a dog's pack includes you, and if you have the proper relationship with your dog, you are the pack leader. We have to manage our client relationships in such a way as to create a calm, submissive client. Who just got that? For those of you who don't watch The Dog Whisperer a lot, a happy dog is really called a calm, submissive dog. It knows where it's supposed to be in the pack, and it doesn't feel like it needs to challenge anyone because there's good pack leadership. Moving on to slide 9. Let's discuss some more basic tenets from Cesar or Cesarisms that I believe we can use in our everyday lives as project leaders with our clients. Dogs are not humans. Rehabilitating is not about fixing. Practice unwavering leadership. With some very slight changes, we can make these Cesarisms 100% applicable to us in our current environment. Move to slide 10. Clients are not friends. Only 2 slight changes to the above 3 Cesarisms to make these apply to us. Moving to slide 11. Now what I'd like to do is I'd like to focus in on each one of these individual Cesarisms. The first one, clients are not friends. So we'll talk about client motivations, favors versus negotiations, and then also lessons from failed projects. Moving to slide 12. Clients can be a lot of things to you. The company that pays their invoices so that we can keep our lights on, a company in need of our services and our products, even a company that could benefit from a long-term symbiotic relationship with us. However, let's make one thing very clear. Clients cannot and should not be your friends. The moment that your relationship with your client crosses over to friendship, you have experienced a transformation that will not serve in the best interest of either you or your client. I would even go as far as saying that you should ask for reassignment if this event occurs because of the inherent conflict of interest. The Dog Whisperer would tell you that one of the biggest mistakes that dog owners make is that they humanize their canine companion. The fact of the matter is that dogs are not humans. Although they are social animals that are capable of displaying affection to their owners, this does not make dogs humans. When you understand a dog for what it really is, a fairly simple creature, it becomes a lot easier to understand their behavior. What are some of the basic drivers to dogs' behavior? Dogs are motivated by food. If you were to talk with a dog trainer, you would probably quickly understand that food is probably the key driver to get dogs to learn new behaviors and tricks. Unlike most humans, dogs will work for food. Dogs live in the moment. Dogs don't think about events that happened 5 years ago, or even events that occurred 10 minutes ago. They live in the moment. They are not concerned about what's going on. They're concerned about what's going on right now. They're not worried about yesterday or even tomorrow. Dogs need good pack leadership. In the absence of good leadership, dogs do all sorts of things that would lead you to believe that they aren't really man's best friend. Things like overt aggressiveness and unruly behavior. When dogs sense that there is a leadership vacuum, they move quickly to fill it, and they will continue their behavior until either they or someone else has stepped into their pack leader role. What good does this understanding of dogs do for us as project leaders? There are many parallels between dogs and client behaviors. Let's make a few simple adjustments to the above statements. Move to slide 13. Clients are motivated by performance. If you don't believe this, then let's go through some examples right here of how clients are motivated by performance. Your project starts to miss key milestones. Your project team does a poor job of defining requirements, and now you are asking the client for additional money to develop something that they thought you already knew about and was included in the original estimate. Your deliverable does not meet all of your client's documented requirements. How would your client respond to any of these examples? Let there be no mistake. Your client will not be happy with you. Clients are motivated by the strong performance of your team. Strong performance is a prerequisite to developing a solid relationship with your client. Clients live in the moment. Your project has been tracking along well, but you experience an unexpected hiccup. You hold a design review, but forget to include certain data that your client has been hinting around wanting to see. It doesn't matter how well the project has been managed up to that point. At that point, either the project is not going as well as it should be, or it has been horribly mismanaged. Clients are as happy as the present situation on your project. This doesn't mean that you should only focus on the present as a project leader. It does mean that if you become too far-sighted, you may end up with a very dissatisfied client. Clients need good project leadership. Your client has to go to several different points of contact to have their questions answered. The project leader provides incomplete and/or inconsistent status report updates to them. The project team appears to not be receiving any direction from their PM. These are all red flags that will have your client unhappy with you, regardless of how well your project is being executed. So why is it important to differentiate between clients and friends? If we could move to slide 14. So as you can see in this diagram right here, we have the project manager sitting in the middle, and with that project manager, we have a couple of clients. Now, in the eyes of this project manager, she probably believes that she's doing a pretty good job. But developing friendships with your client can be a dangerous thing. In the short term, it may appear as if your client relationship is stronger. But in the long run, you're sabotaging your client relationship. Ask for favors. Good PMs negotiate. Do you know what the difference is between a favor and a negotiation? According to dictionary.com, a favor is something done or granted out of goodwill, rather than justice or for remuneration, a kind act. A negotiation is a mutual discussion and arrangement of the terms of a transaction or agreement. The difference is that when a favor is granted, nothing is expected in return. Getting something in return is foundational to a negotiation. The moment that a PM starts to grant favors on a project is the moment that your client will start to believe that he or she is entitled to whatever you have. And I know that a lot of the people sitting on the phone call right now who have project management experience have encountered this type of behavior. So moving on to slide 15. In the Trouble Projects paper, concessions during negotiations with no price increase is cited as one of the root causes for poor planning and estimating. Accepting of additional terms and conditions or increasing scope and or responsibilities during contract negotiations without increasing the price often causes a project to be unprofitable or less profitable than projected. One of the prevention measures for this root cause is to make it clear that you are willing to negotiate a reduced scope in order to reduce the price, but you will not accept terms that make the deal unprofitable. Another one of the root causes for poor project estimating is failure to adhere to published pricing guidelines. During the marketing phase, often our sales representatives or sales representatives across most of these organizations who run in a services-based model underprice or lowball the price in order to get their foot into the customer's door. As a result of underpricing, projects are often under financial pressure from the beginning, and even minor cost overruns cannot be easily accommodated. Do not expect customer flexibility or sympathy in cases where you underpriced a project. Let me repeat that. Do not expect customer flexibility or sympathy in cases where you underpriced a project. Customers often do not care or appreciate the fact that your company is losing money on a particular project. I want to highlight two prevention measures recommended to address this root cause. First, follow authorized pricing guidelines for your company. Second, do not reduce estimates to simply lower price. Reduce actual scope to reduce price. So we understand the difference between favors and negotiations and IBM's position on each. The difference is that a favor doesn't ask for anything in return. Getting something in return is foundational to a negotiation. The moment that a project leader starts to grant favors on a project is the moment that their client will start to believe that he or she is entitled to whatever you have. They will ask you to simply tuck additional work and look the other way when additional requirements are added to your solution that has already been priced based on an initial set of requirements. For those of you who haven't experienced healthy relationships like this, healthy friendships in the past, this is not friendly type of behavior. So treat them like their clients, not your friends. That's what they're there for. I believe that we've beaten this dead horse. So let's move on to the next HR-ism. Now, moving on to slide 16. Rehabilitating is not about fixing. During this point, we're going to talk about exercising your dog regularly. We're going to ask the question, what would Cesar do? And then we're also going to talk about the three dimensions of communication. Moving to slide 17. Dogs are not machines that you can simply fix and think that they will not need any additional work. You have to remember that more than half of the dog's behavior equation rests with the dog owner. So if you have a dog that needs to be rehabilitated, then there is a near certainty that you also have some work to do on your own. If you watch Cesar, you would know that there's one recommendation that he provides to dog owners more than any other. Exercise your dog. Why does he make this recommendation? It's simple. When dogs don't get enough exercise, they carry around a lot of pent-up energy. By itself, the pent-up energy is not destructive. However, if dogs aren't provided with a positive channel to apply their energy, they can do destructive things. Let's think of some examples. Biting on shoes, tearing up furniture, not listening to you when you're trying to provide them with direction. Many times, these examples are just symptoms of another problem. The dog isn't getting a positive channel to apply their energy. So how do we apply this lesson to our clients? Simple. We can make them do push-ups. Okay, I'm just kidding about that. You can't put your drill sergeant hat on and drop your client for push-ups every day. But you can do something else regularly that's even more beneficial for your client than exercise. Exercise is to a dog as blank is to a client. I want you to think about that before you move on to slide 18. Okay, let's move to slide 18. Exercise is to a dog as communication is to a client. Communicate with your clients regularly. Communication is to clients what exercise is to dogs. It puts them on a regular cadence and aids in creating a calm, submissive client because now they know what exactly is going on with the project. But it's not enough to simply communicate with your clients. You have to do it well. 90% of a project's project manager's time consists of communicating in one form or another over the course of an average workday. If you don't believe it, track the time you spend on conference calls, web conferences, reading emails, generating emails, and preparing status reports. If you're going to make this kind of investment each day, wouldn't it make sense to do it well? With activities like communication, quantity alone does not trump quality. In most projects, communication is the only deliverable that your client will receive prior to getting their final deliverable. Moving on to slide 19. There are three dimensions to communicate that we must. There are three dimensions to communication that we must discuss for you to fully understand how to effectively communicate with your client. They are the three C's of client communication: conciseness, clarity, and consistency. This 2x2 matrix shows the effects that conciseness and clarity have on stakeholders. Before we go on, I think it would be appropriate if we define these terms. Conciseness is economy in writing or speaking. This means that you only use as many words as absolutely necessary to get your point across. How many of you know who wrote the famous quote, "I have made this letter longer than usual only because I have not had time to make it shorter"? I'm going to read it to you one more time. "I've made this letter longer than usual only because I have not had time to make it shorter." All right. For those of you who answered Mark Twain, you're wrong. The answer is Blaise Pascal, a French philosopher and mathematician who included the quote in a letter to his friend. However, this mathematician's quote is especially germane to this discussion. Oftentimes, it takes longer and is more difficult to develop a short message than a long one. Clarity. Clarity is clearness or lucidity as to perception of or understanding. Freedom from indistinctness or ambiguity. The goal is to have your communications to your client possess both conciseness and clarity. In the Alpha study, they found that when communication lacked conciseness and clarity, stakeholders were more likely to replace the project manager. In other words, if your communication is verbose and ambiguous, right? So we're looking at the lower left-hand quadrant. If your communication is verbose and ambiguous, there's a strong probability that you will be looking for another job. Frustration was only slightly improved when the communication was clear, but the communication was also very wordy, lengthy, or too frequent. So moving up to the upper left-hand quadrant, translation: if you're communicating clearly but you're taking way too long, there's a fairly good chance that you too will be asked to look for another job. The worst case scenario is when the communication is unclear and concise. So the bottom right hand quadrant. These communications may commonly be referred to as hand grenades. An example of a hand grenade could be an email like, "We may miss the next project milestone by 2 months. There's little to no chance of recovery." Hand grenades like this can send people running and cause widespread panic inside the client and project teams. If you communicate like this, there is a good chance that not only will you be looking for another job, but your senior management and executive teams may spend a lot more time than they want triaging the aftermath of your hand grenades. The perfect communication consists of both conciseness and clarity. If you communicate with conciseness and clarity, you build stakeholder trust. And oddly enough, you can receive the added benefit of reducing the amount of communication that you have to generate for your client. There are less one-off requests because the client knows what to expect, and your client doesn't feel like they need to communicate with you between your regular interlocks as often. However, these two dimensions alone are not enough to keep your client in a calm, submissive state. This is where the third dimension comes in: consistency. Consistency is reliability or uniformity of successive results or events. in layman's terms, is doing the same thing at the same time in the same way so that your client knows what to expect. Alphas put a premium on regular and predictable communication, and they use this technique to manage stakeholder expectations. Furthermore, it was found during the Alpha study that inconsistent and unpredictable communication did as much or more harm as no communication at all. These are important findings that you should take to heart as a project leader. Without clear, concise, and consistent communication, the probability of project failure increases significantly, even if your project is being technically executed well. Moving on to slide 20, practice unwavering leadership. So we're going to talk about the elements of leadership, the term as if, and then also knowing you are needed. Practice unwavering leadership. This may be the most important Caesarism of this entire discussion. Caesar Millan practices unwavering leadership by making it 100% clear to the dogs that he rehabilitates, that he is the pack leader. How does he do it? With a little courage and commitment, he walks into the rooms of barking, growling dogs as if he is the project leader or the pack leader. When a dog attempts to challenge him, he quickly reacts and heads them off before they even have an opportunity to get worked up to the point where they can be dangerous. I'm sure that at least some of you on the phone have seen Cesar do this. One of the episodes that I watched had a bulldog that was clearly out of control. Cesar calls bulldogs, Rottweilers, Doberman Pinschers, pit bulls, and other dogs like this that were raised to fight red zone dogs. The bulldog truly believed that it owned the house and everything in it. That was until Cesar seized the dog around its neck and put it on the ground belly up. Let me be very clear. Do not use this technique on your client. But his action illustrates the point that I'm trying to drive to. A good leader will not allow the situation to grow out of control. A good leader nips the problem in the bud so that they don't get to the point where there are serious problems. If Cesar allowed the dog to continue escalating its aggressive behavior, he could have put himself in a position where he could have been seriously injured. At IBM, we've done a great job of clearly defining the project management competency. We have documented it and its educational requirements. We have developed sound processes around the competency based on countless lessons learned over decades of IBM's project management experience. We do a great job of teaching our project leaders about project management. However, I don't believe we do as good of a job of teaching our project leaders how to lead projects. Does everyone understand the difference between these two? I can memorize every line of every course that is available on project management, but does that guarantee project success? This statement only applies if you believe that the competency of project management, more so than any other technical competency, is really a combination of art and science, not just science. Moving to slide 21. Why on earth would I call the discipline one that relied on art just as much, or maybe even more so than science, of our documented processes? It's because leadership is not something that you can just take away from a book and do well. Leadership is multifactorial. It's built from a combination of education, experiences, and attitude. Let's go through each one of these factors to figure out which one we should focus on during this session. Education. Now, speaking from an IBM perspective, we do a great job with education. IBM has world-class project management education. If you go to the GBS catalog and the IBM Learning website and select engagement and project management, you will find well over 50 courses available on that category. The courses are targeted for an audience with a large spectrum of skills and experience, from novices to experts. In addition to PM-specific education, there are a plethora of other courses available to project managers so that they can brush up on the latest technologies, methodologies, and businesses. The IBM Project Management Center of Excellence is a website that provides detailed information and guidance on all the educational requirements for becoming an IBM-certified project manager. The education that is available to IBM PMs is top-notch, so this couldn't possibly be the leadership factor that we are delinquent on. Experience. IBM's PM certification process is more rigorous than any other company that I know of. If you have attained IBM Project Management certification, you have certainly achieved a great deal more experience than someone who has met the minimum experiential criteria needed to sit for the Project Management Professional, or PMP exam, offered by PMI. In addition, IBM is a leader in the world of intellectual capital. If you don't believe me, as an IBMer, you can visit the IGS Knowledge Portal. It's an absolutely fabulous place to visit when you're starting a new project but want to save yourself some time while leveraging best practices. So if IBM truly does a world-class job with factors 1 and 2, education and experience, why do we still have projects that fail? Why aren't we succeeding on all of our projects? I believe the answer is element 3, attitude. How many of you have heard the term as if? This is a statement that I have used when working with newer project managers or even students. Dress as if you are already at your next level. Walk into the room as if you own it. It has everything to do with the attitude and very little to do with your education on PM processes. Education and experiences will provide you with a solid foundation to become a reasonable project manager. However, if you want to be a great project manager, then you have to have attitude. Moving to slide 22. The tricky thing about attitude is that you actually have to believe that you have it yourself before others will believe that you have it. A little confusing, huh? Let me say it a different way. Others won't believe that you have the right stuff if you don't believe it yourself. Does this mean that you shouldn't lead a group until you actually convince yourself that you are the right person to lead them? Absolutely not. Attitude is one of those tricky, ethereal qualities that you have to practice in order to achieve. The more that you practice, the more that you will gain, the more that you will believe in yourself, and the more likely that the client will believe you. You have to believe that you are an integral, important part of that project. You have to believe that you are a difference maker. In the Alpha study, PMs were asked to rate themselves on the following statement. What is the importance of this project manager's role to the current project? On a scale from this project would be managed better without a PM, or 0%, to the role as PM is critical to this project's success, or 100%. The difference in perceptions of self-importance between alpha and non-alpha PMs was startling. The alpha PMs rated themselves as at a 96 in response to this question, whereas non-alpha PMs rated themselves at 70%. That's a 26% delta. In other words, the alpha PMs believe that the projects cannot succeed without them. The non-alpha PMs believe that the PM role is important, but not critical. Moving to slide 23. When the managers of those PMs were asked the same question, their responses were very similar to their PMs, based on whether they were classified as alpha or non-alpha PMs. Could the energy that the PMs give off have influenced their manager's view of how important PMs are and the success of their projects? It certainly seems that way here. Could this be the genie in the bottle? If you walk onto the project as if you were a difference maker and critical to the success of a project, could this be the secret sauce in alpha PMs? Let's not jump to conclusions too early. Moving to slide 24. In the alpha study, PMs were asked to rate themselves in the following statement. I have adequate authority to manage the projects for which I am responsible. The difference between the alpha PMs and the non-alpha PMs was stunning. There was a 42% delta between the responses from the alpha and non-alpha PMs. Do alpha PMs have more authority than their non-alpha counterparts? Probably not, but they most certainly act as if they do. By acting as if they have the authority to effectively manage their projects, they usurp that authority. In other words, the alpha PMs step in to fill the leadership void, heading off bad behavior from their clients and project teams by assuming the pack leader role. Moving to slide 25. When the managers of these PMs were asked to rate them on the same question, responses were nearly identical between the managers of the alpha and non-alpha PMs. The managers believed that their PMs were sufficiently empowered to effectively lead their projects, regardless of their PM's classification as alpha or non-alpha PM. So what's the difference here? Well, I believe it's attitude. So have any of you seen any of the shows with a dog whistle where, you know, there's clearly a dog that's out of control and pretty aggressive? Usually the owner has the dog locked up in a room or in the backyard, and then Cesar comes over. What's typically the first thing that Cesar does with the dog? Well, he walks into the space that the dog has taken ownership of as if he is the pack leader. The dog may resist him for a little while, but they always succumb. How does he do this? Cesar walks to the room with his chin up, chest out, and shoulders back. He is not overly aggressive or anxious. He assumes the role of calm, assertive pack leader the entire time that he's around the dog. This allows the dog to relax and become calm and submissive. But why do dogs act aggressively in the first place? We have to go back to our dog discussion at the beginning of this presentation. Dogs are pack animals. In the pack, there is always a pack leader or alpha dog. When you see dogs acting in an aggressive manner, this is usually a sign that the dog is confused and is trying to force leadership into the pack, whether it's that dog or someone else. The Trouble Projects paper has a cause in it identified as lack of or inadequate project management discipline that they used in previous years, but you don't see it in the latest 2006 version of this paper. In the paper, it states that this root cause is no longer used because it was too general and not descriptive enough. It has been replaced by several other project management root causes that describe specific issues with more granular detail. Is that really the case? Or is it that this root cause is the one that is hard to quantify, hard to define? Maybe this root cause is the attitude they were talking about. I assert that you can have a perfectly trained and educated PM who may do well on smaller, more insignificant projects. However, the moment that you place them on a larger and more complex project, you will quickly discover if they have the necessary attitude to lead their client and project team. Moving to slide 26. Now that you've completed this session, you should be able to identify the commonality between clients and dogs. You should also be able to understand some of the methods that, you know, the dog whisperer, Cesar Millan, has used effectively on dogs and how that crosses over into our client relationship management focus as project leaders. And be the pack leader of your project. Don't be afraid to do it. At this time, I'd like to open it up for questions.
Thank you, John, for that wonderful, great presentation. I really enjoyed that. Again, I want to open things up to questions and answers now at this point. Remember that for those of you that have maybe muted your phone, you'll need to push *6 in order to unmute your phone to ask a question of John. Any questions out there?
You know, I think this means that it just makes sense, huh?
I actually found it very interesting. It's a very good presentation.
Thank you.
Anything in particular that you found very helpful?
Well, I found it interesting that you made that comparison with the pack animals and dealing with a group. And I have to agree that I think a lot of times when you're in meetings and you don't feel you have that guidance from either the project manager or from a VP or an SVP, the group tends to get very agitated and things get very disorganized. And you definitely need someone to stand up and say, okay, I'm running it, and give guidance to people in the group. So I found that a very interesting point.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that. And you know, engaging in that leadership role, you know, early and often is, you know, the best thing to do as well, right? instead of allowing the situation to get out of control or people to get concerned, you know, stepping in, you know, right from the beginning in that leadership role and really guiding, directing, you know, those meetings, the project, whatever it is that you're responsible for, I mean, is certainly going to pay dividends.
Definitely. And also the whole idea of communication. I've been in a number of groups where there was too much communication, and you start getting the attitude of, like, I'm spending more time in meetings than I am on the project. So then what ends up happening to the members of the group? They end up having to put in more time in order to finish the project and still continue to go to these meetings.
Right, absolutely. And another thing that you may experience is, you know, at some point, people just stop reading the emails. And that's something you definitely want to avoid.
Right.
Do we have any other questions or comments out there?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm fine.
I was just trying to follow up on the attitude issue, and that's having the attitude to show the leadership. And I guess that comes more with experience. Is there something at IBM where you're teaching people this or how to do this?
Right. Well, typically what we try to do as often as possible in IBM is when we have a younger, less experienced project manager, you know, come into an organization, we typically try to pair them up and you know, establish mentoring relationships, you know, between that less experienced project manager and somebody who's probably, you know, already IBM certified. In the idea, you know, situation, we would also have that project manager working, you know, possibly on a large project with an experienced project manager, so they can kind of learn the ropes and gain confidence. Because I mean, a lot of it is, you know, gaining confidence and saying, okay, this is the way it's done. I can do this, right? And part of it is, you know, actually kind of lying to yourself, to be honest, right? It's lying to yourself to the point where you actually believe what you're telling yourself, right? It's I can do this. I'm good at this. And you reinforce that, and then you go out and you execute. And eventually there's this point where it starts to click and it starts to work.
Great.
I would make two comments to follow that up. One, if you are responsible for the project, you are the project manager from, as we used to call it, cradle to grave, and you take total responsibility, then you run the project naturally. You don't have to lie to yourself because it is you who is the leader. You are responsible for the project, and that's what you're doing.
Yep, absolutely.
So that if you are in that kind of role and you want to be in that kind of role, if you love project management, it should come naturally, don't you think?
Well, I think it comes maybe a little more natural for, you know, some people than others. I mean, we can get into probably, you know, a very long discussion about, you know, are leaders, you know, born, or, you know, can you teach a leader how to lead? And I think, you know, there's a little bit of both, right? There's some people who have a more natural disposition or aptitude, you know, for, you know, taking, for participating in a competency like project management, for instance. However, that's not to say that, you know, you can't take somebody who, let's say, for instance, is very technically adept, and teach them, you know, the basic principles, and then also work with them to build the confidence so they can be effective leaders as well.
Oh, I'm sure you're absolutely right. But as a general statement, I would be hesitant to say to folks that they're lying to themselves if they're following a path of being a project manager, and instead of running a piece, they're running the whole project. They are the leader. And actually,
right.
I think it's terrific, but, you know, it's not, I would sort of at least point it out. Yes, you're right, there are some who don't do it naturally, but, so those folks need to find out how to become the leader, but in a sense, if you're project managing an entire job, you are the leader.
Yep, absolutely.
I also wanted to absolutely commend you, because there's one thing that I am taking away from here that I think is fabulous, which is if you don't reduce estimates simply to lower price, you reduce the scope to reduce price. That's a great point, because it's forgotten about. And certainly,
yeah.
I you know, I've had some experience, and I wouldn't have thought of that. I think it's an absolutely great point.
Thank you.
So I got a lot out of this presentation, so I thank you.
And actually, that was Linda Wortman. Linda is the one that hosts our twice-monthly job shop calls, right, Linda?
Yeah, that's true, and we have a job shop coming up on this Monday night, which I would invite anybody. It's going to be a little bit different. Anybody who wants to do or needs to do what we call, a short thumbnail sketch is called a elevator speech. But you really need to do these even when you're working, when you're explaining to people sort of what you're about or what makes you different. You're working in a PMO. Why are you different than other project managers? It's something that's good, because we're always selling ourselves. And John Hadley is going to be coming on and talking about that, as well as we will have some recruiters calling in. So thank you, Henry, for that. That's this Monday night at 9 o'clock. Same number.
Yes, actually. What was that?
Can I just ask a quick question?
Sure.
With regard to balancing meetings with dealing with email and the project manager's daily duties, what is a healthy percentage of balance between one's meeting schedule and what the client wants? Versus what, as a project manager, one needs to accomplish vis-a-vis emails, status reports, updating the project plan, making sure you've got and are measuring your requirements document to your project plan, to your scope, to your budget, et cetera.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can tell you from a client communication standpoint, for the vast majority of my projects, with the exception of projects that I took over that were troubled, and I was assigned to replace the incumbent PM, for the projects that I had an opportunity to kind of manage from cradle to grave, my normal cadence of communications with the client was really once a week, right? So I'd have a weekly status report. My weekly status report was in a certain format that they expected to see every week. For me, it was an Excel spreadsheet that included schedule milestone performance, risk management plan, issues, action items. Also mm-hmm. included, the change control log as well.
Right.
And so this is something that they would expect to see in the same format every week, right? And so
right.
The thing is, they get so used to seeing it in that format. And they know that format provides them with everything that they could possibly need. The only communications that I would have outside of those weekly status reports were during design reviews, right? So when you get to a milestone, you have a design review. Then, usually it would be, the technical lead, myself, and maybe one or two other subject matter experts would fly out, and then we would have face-to-face, design reviews with the clients. But if you manage it, effectively from the start and provide them with the information that they need, and sometimes, clients will look at a status report that includes all those elements that I talked about, mm-hmm. and they'll say, geez, I don't want to know about all that. But if you train them to start seeing it, in the same format every time and walk them through it, they're going to start to catch on, and they'll start to, realize that, hey, I don't need to talk with you, 5 or 10 times a week. I can wait for the next status report.
Right. The thing is like I took over a project that was floundering from a,
yep.
Some have used the words incapable. I've used more of an incompetent project manager. And it's an agile web development project with quite a significant budget with it. And it's the client is looking for, you know, almost daily meetings. And I'm pushing back and saying, look, you know, we don't need to have a daily meeting. It's taking away from the developers or the managers of the agile teams, and we've got different teams from actually doing their work. So let's try and schedule this maybe twice a week, you know, and trying to manage the client's expectation. Now, keeping in mind, of course, that they are the client and they are paying the cost of this. So, you know what I mean? It's I think
That's always a fine line, you know, that you have to walk, because, you know, I took over a similar situation. The project was, you know, might as well have been on fire. And, you know, I can tell you that initially, you know, the client wanted to meet every day, just like what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And they and that's exactly what we did, right? Because the client was really concerned about our ability to be able to deliver. And until I was able to demonstrate that we had results, that we were able to achieve results, right, that met our predictions or forecast, right, so that they could start to feel a little more comfortable, I wasn't able to back them down off of that communication frequency.
Right.
So once we started to achieve little victories, that's when you started saying, okay, well, geez, you know, meeting every day may not make sense. How about let's meet, you know, three times a week, you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Right.
And then you just slowly kind of wean them, you know, off of that until you get to a point where it's normal. But I think whenever you get assigned to a special project, you know, i.e. one that's troubled, you have to expect that your client's going to want more communication initially. And, you know, it's one of those things that we as project managers, unfortunately, kind of have to suck up, right?
So we have to suck up
and we have to make sure that, you know, we're getting the support from our management team so that we have enough resources available to accommodate all that additional communication, which drives real work.
Right. So just to that point, you know, and I've gotten small wins by getting a sandbox environment established successfully, and we're moving to alpha on the 14th of December, and then beta February 1st, and then production in November of 08. But I didn't hear quite what the percentage is, or is it more on a project by project basis, and there isn't really a best practices, so to speak, with regard to a percentage of, you know, interaction with the client versus, you know, managing the project from a project manager perspective.
Yeah. So when you know, I have a project that's under control, you know, typically my weekly status report, you know, lasts for an hour or less,
mm-hmm.
right? Out of a, you know, supposed 40-hour work week. You can't see me hold my hands up in quotes right here, you know, regarding the 40-hour work week. But, you know, so the status report lasts 1 hour or less because it's in a standard format where they can very easily digest that information quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have to tell you, you know, gathering the information, you know, initially prepping it so that, you know, it's meeting those three C's, you know, of communication.
Right.
That takes quite a bit more time, right? I spend, you know, for every hour that, you know, I'm presenting to the client, I'm probably spending at least 2 to 3 hours putting together a concise, you know, communication that I know they're going to understand.
Right.
So this is David.
What I'm hearing is it's about a 3-to-1 ratio.
Yeah, prep time versus actually delivering.
Right. Great, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, this is David Radkovich. I'd like to follow up with that. I attended the New Jersey PMI International Project Management Day, November 1st, and the afternoon session was dedicated to management styles. And I think, you know, you have to be aware of the management styles of people that we're communicating to or reporting to, because, you know, depending on their management style, it's going to depend on the amount of information they want. So I think that's one of the things we also have to keep in mind at all times.
No, absolutely. Thank you, David.
And I think if you go on the New Jersey PMI website for the, you can get the that presentation that they presented for the afternoon, which was real, I thought it was an excellent presentation. So
appreciate that.
I'd also like to comment that I really enjoyed the presentation. I know my most successful projects were projects where a good client relationship was essential, and, you know, it involved the client understanding what our needs were, as well as us understanding their needs. You know, it can't be a one-way type of relationship. Everything can't be from client. If you can make the client understand what, you know, we're trying to get out of them as well, that's where things are best.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really good advice.
I think we might have time for one more question if there's one out there. John, I wanted to mention that I, too, wanted to thank you for this presentation this evening. I caught something additional that I didn't catch the first time I heard you give this, and that is that for some people, they might be working on an internal project or in a PMO office or perhaps on a sub-project in a situation where maybe they don't have direct client interface, maybe with an external client. Maybe they're not talking to an external client or communicating with one, but in every case, no matter what it is, the project that you're heading up, you have a client, although they might be not be a client in the sense of the word where it's an external client, it might be an internal client. And it's important for us as project managers to realize that when we're in that situation, we need to treat that client, just the same as an external client. Whether it be the head project manager and you're working on a sub-project, or the head of our PMO office, or an internal person that's your client internally, I think you'd need to keep these things in mind too. And that was something that I caught from this presentation that I hadn't thought of when you were presenting it, when I had heard it originally. So thank you for opening that up, a new thought process for me.
Hey, thanks, Henry. That, by the way, I think that's great advice. I know I worked with Target Corporation for a couple of years in Minneapolis and worked with their project management office, and that was one of the things that I worked with, you know, their project leaders, whether they be project managers or business analysts, with quite a bit. You know, the projects that they had within their IT department were all internal projects. So they had a tendency to want to be a little, you know, more sloppy and, you know, treat it like it's family instead of, you know, it's a client, right? And so, you know, I worked with them, spent a lot of time working with them on, no, treat this, you know, treat your client like he or she is a client, right? Yeah, I understand that, you know, this person may be internal versus external, but if you treat them like you're, you know, they're your client at the end of the day, you're going to get better results every time.
Yep, that's very true. Well, I want to thank John Jones, for being with us on the call. He is a PMP, and he's got his MBA, an executive certified project manager at IBM, and you can see the experience that he brings to the mix. So thank you, John, for being with us this evening. I want to thank everyone that's on the call. I want to thank Steve Blase and Radkovich for being on the call, Linda Wartman for chipping in. It's great to have people that are involved in PM Lessons Learned from the beginning and involved in the startup of this group and involved in volunteering to help out on the calls and be on the calls. And exciting to have all of you on the calls and those of you that will be listening in by podcast. Again, we hope that you'll listen to some of our other conference calls, listen to our archives, and perhaps participate on a future conference call. And with that, I'd like to sign off. I want to remind everybody that if you'd like to, you can stay on the call. We'll be having discussion. Usually we have discussion after these calls, open discussion about PM topics or anything that you might want to talk about in relation to the call or any project management questions or issues that you have that you'd like to discuss with the group. This is a good place to do that. So I'm going to be shutting off the recording. And with that, I want to thank you all for attending this evening. God bless you, and keep on learning.
Thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you. It was great.
That sure was a lot of helpful information, wasn't it? Please join us for a future conference call. We currently have several calls a month. Join our Yahoo group for more information about our calls and information to further your project management career. Membership is free. Details are at pmlessonslearned.com. We hope you'll continue to listen in to our podcasts and tell others about our podcasts and our group. pmlessonslearned.com. We're all about project managers helping project managers. And until next time, keep on learning.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project managers helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.